Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for the Doctors Roundtable, a forum for conversations with Atlanta's leading doctors and thought leaders about cutting-edge trends and topics in health, wellness, and lifestyle issues. Here's our host, Tanya Mack.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks so much for joining us. We have a great topic today. I know you see healthcare in the news almost every time you pick up the paper or turn on the TV. And as patients out there, we sometimes are wondering, with the government getting involved and all this change coming up, what happened to the doctor-patient relationship in that mix somewhere? And hopefully today, our topic is concierge medicine, and we're going to explore one place you might find that again, that I think is a growing trend in the United States. So I'm thrilled to have two guests with us today. The first is Dr. Ellie Campbell. Welcome, Dr. Campbell.
Thanks for having me.
And let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Campbell. She got her Doctor of Osteopathy from Kirksville College of Osteopathic Medicine. She has a practice in Cumming, Georgia. She did a residency in family medicine at the Medical College of Georgia, always a great resource in our state. And she is double board certified in both family medicine and integrative holistic medicine. So you have a lot to offer along the continuum for all of our consumers out there. And my second guest today is Michael Tatro. And Michael, one nice thing about being in Atlanta is we have a lot of national resources here, and you're one that represents over 27 countries and 500,000 readers through your publication, Concierge Medicine Today, of which you're the editor. So welcome to you.
Thank you.
Very good. Well, we've not done any topic before in concierge medicine, so we're going to go all the way back to the beginning. And I think a lot of consumers have the beginning idea that this is a little more personalized and direct access. So direct care would be another term that sometimes patients would think of when they hear the word concierge medicine. But Dr. Campbell, why don't we start with you and just talk to us from your perspective about concierge medicine and how it's kind of trending up. And from your perspective, what was your journey on choosing to practice this way?
Okay. Well, let's start, I think, maybe a definition of concierge medicine, which really is evolving because there's almost as many different ways to practice it as there are doctors who provide it. But in a nutshell, it's a method to deliver health care which is based on a relationship between the patient and the doctor in which fees are paid directly to that doctor. And there's many, many models that involve paying either an annual or a retainer fee for services provided that are not covered by insurance. Many practices meld, some insurance accepted, and then the fees cover non-covered services not traditionally covered by their insurance. In my practice, I take no insurance, and I don't file or bill any insurance. I opted out of Medicare in 2005, and I've been a non-Medicare, non-participating insurance provider since 2005. My journey was an interesting one, I think. I started out in indigent healthcare. I worked in a community health center, and my mission was to provide healthcare to the uninsured. And many of our patients were uninsured because they suffered the symptoms related to chronic, undertreated medical disease. And so it was their health that was preventing them from becoming working, contributing members of our society. And the tools that I had to help them were limited. It was basically drugs and surgery, and those were the only two options. And the more I practiced medicine, 13 years in that model, the more efficient I got at prescribing medication faster and faster and faster and limiting the care that was provided in turn for the number of prescriptions that I wrote. And it was becoming increasingly dissatisfying to the patients as well as to me because I wasn't getting the outcomes, and the patients were suffering side effects of their drugs that were treated by more drugs. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm an osteopathic physician, and in our training back in medical school, we learned about body, mind, and spirit. And nowhere in that model was the mind or the spirit considered. Nowhere really was the body recognized and what toxins were going into it and how the patient was eating and how they were handling their stress and how they were sleeping. And so it felt untrue to my training. I started attending continuing medical education classes in how to do bioidentical hormone replacement therapy to get to the root cause of why women were having hormone imbalances, things like using probiotics, which back in 2000 was a swear word to my colleagues. They didn't even know what probiotics were, how they could possibly
use them. Now we have celebrities touting them every time we turn on the TV.
Exactly. But back then, I was a stranger in a strange land, and my partners would not support me at my community health center. They wouldn't refill prescriptions. They thought I was crazy. I like to use the wisdom of the ancient providers, and when somebody in the backwoods been using black drawing salve on a wound for 20 years and it works great, there's no reason to abandon that for a prescription topical antibiotic if old-fashioned black drawing salve is going to work. So I was a bit of a maverick, and I became dissatisfied. So I hit an epiphany when we got a new CEO, and his mission was to see more patients, and I couldn't see more than I already saw. And I decided that I was going to leave and start my own practice. So in 2005, I left my community health center and made the decision with the help of a compounding pharmacist with whom I was close friends that I could indeed start a solo practice, not take insurance, and meet the needs of the consumer the way that they wanted health care delivered and they would be willing to pay for it and not be interfered upon by the rules and regulations of third-party payers, Medicare, and insurance. So I brought the relationship to the forefront, allowed the patients to tell me what they wanted me to do and how they needed my advice, and I created a business model around it.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds kind of scary at the beginning, but how's it panned out? Because we're now many, many years later, and you're pretty well established.
Scary is an understatement. It's more like terrifying, sleepless nights. It totally changed my family dynamic. At that time, my husband was a stay-at-home dad, and one of us needed to make a living, so Jim had to go back to work. And that changed the whole everything about how our family was arranged. So now we had two working parents where we'd only had one in the past. It took 3 years for me to make more money than my nurse. So it was a very long, hard crawl that my patients, I don't think, ever appreciated. But every time I felt like I was going to give up, things would change and I would have a great case or a great save in a patient's life because I was able to pay attention to the details that I otherwise would have lost if I'd been too busy.
And then you were remembering why you did it in the first
exactly.
place. Exactly. That it spurred you on.
So it continued. And so now I'm almost 9 years in and I love going to work every day and I love the care that I provide. And whereas in 2005, I did about 90% traditional family medicine and 10% integrative care, that now is completely flipped. And I do about 10 or 20% family medicine and 80 to 90% integrative holistic medicine. I always choose the natural remedies and the natural approaches first.
Mm-hmm. So despite the kind of approach, I guess, as you're listening, Michael, to Dr. Campbell's personal story, you kind of see that on many places and internationally that both on the provider side and the patient side, patients and providers get somewhat frustrated with the status quo of how they're practicing, and concierge medicine is one way that they're bringing the two together. Is that a trend that you see?
Yeah, absolutely. There are a lot more doctors nowadays getting into concierge medicine because of the frustrating factors that she just mentioned. They're seeing their patients on average for 6 to 7 minutes, and that's just not enough time to get a medical history on a patient that you've known for 3 years or you've known for 2 minutes. There's always that frustration factor for a lot of physicians, and concierge medicine provides that avenue. It provides a very practical, simplistic business model that a lot of physicians are being attracted to because it is simpler. It is very price transparent. I mean, why is it that the doctor's office and the hospitals are the only place where there's no price board, there's no value menu. We have no idea how much things cost. And, that price transparency, concierge medicine has, originated in the early 90s, but really originated back, years and decades ago where, a doctor would come to your home. He would come to your farmhouse. He would deliver care at your bedside. And, this is not a new concept. We're just bringing it
kind
into
of the pendulum swinging back to how care used to be delivered.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So I know that you mentioned price transparency. Our sponsor, HealthGate, actually was in the news in both the AJC and WSB about trying to get even just one price for one procedure with some ballpark somewhat similar, where they got prices from $200 to $12,000 for the same procedure. So I know it's very frustrating all the way around to try to figure out what am I dealing with here. Very good. So let's talk about what would be like a typical concierge medicine patient. So for Dr. Campbell, patients that come to you that are looking for the kind of model and the kind of care you provide, who are they? Are they men, women? Where do they come from and how they find you?
Okay. Well, I think that there is no typical concierge medicine patient because there's no typical concierge medicine doctor. And so very often the patients will navigate towards the physician that provides the care that they want. I think that the most successful concierge practices always have a value added. And for some, for example, that might be that they do FAA physicals. Or for some, it might be that they do sports medicine. For me, it's that I do bioidentical hormone replacement and functional medicine with integrative care. So that's sort of the value added that patients come to see me. I'm not only a family doctor, but I believe the way that they believe about eating a healthy, whole food, organic-based diet. I believe that nutritional supplementation is important no matter how well you eat. I can speak their language from the health food store. I know what the supplements that they're purchasing, how they use them, what the dose should be, what the drug-drug interactions are, what the drug-herb interactions are, what the herb-herb interactions might be. And I'm educated in those areas where their typical primary care doctor is not. In my particular practice, I have about 80% of my patients are women and 20% are men. 52% of my patients are between the ages of 35 and 55. And I have about 9% of my patients are under the age of 19, and about 9% of my patients are over age 65. So I'm a family practitioner, and I see the spectrum. The majority of concierge doctors are internists, and they don't see children at all, and their numbers would definitely be weighted more towards the older population. Most of my patients are employed because they're paying cash for their services, or credit card, or debit, mm-hmm. or check, or monthly, or quarterly, or annually, whatever suits their budget. We can make a payment arrangement that makes sense. But I come from a background of indigent care, and I feel very, very strongly that concierge medicine should not be reserved only for the elite in the community. And I didn't want to be the doctor only to the Atlanta Braves wives. That's not my mission. And so I created a tithing policy for my practice in which 5% of the cash that we make, that's profit, goes into the tithing checking account from which we make cash donations to charity. And 5% of our patients do not pay for us with dollars. Instead, they're given a volunteer service log. They take their log to the community. They collect 15 hours of community service. They turn in their 15 hours of community service and earn 3 months of membership. So I have 5% of my patients are indigent, mm-hmm. and they still get all the same service, all the same services that everybody gets, but they receive their care with dignity. It's not free because free is often valueless. And so they value the care that they get. And I vicariously can contribute many more hours of community service to my community than I could if I had to do them myself.
Right. So you found a way in the very controversial spot of concierge medicine of working out this disparity between having to pay plus seeing all comers, if you would, and
yes.
finding a way for the currency being a little bit different.
Right. And I hope that I didn't just put a noose around my neck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Everything's not free there,
and
guys.
And that I don't yeah. have a line down the mall and out the sidewalk and down the street of patients coming to see me for indigent care, mm-hmm. Because I'm very particular about how those patients come to me. Mm-hmm. They're generally hand-chosen by my staff. Sometimes they're patients who previously were paying consumers and then had a tragedy, mm-hmm. a house fire, a death in a family, mm-hmm. a divorce, and now they're in tears because they can no longer afford to be our patient.
Right.
So often we'll transition them to a scholarship. We call them scholarship memberships. We'll transition to scholarship for a while, and then they'll come back mm-hmm. to paying when they can afford it. Mm-hmm. And some of them have come from my previous practice where I did indigent care, mm-hmm. and they remain my patients today. I've taken care of the same patients for 25 years.
Very good. So, Michael, from your perspective, I know that not all, Dr. Campbell alluded to the fact that a lot of concierge providers are actually come from internal medicine world, and from representing a larger pool, Demographically, what are you seeing from your readership? Do you know the demographics of people interested in concierge medicine or participating?
Yeah, there's a to get a little bit more granular on the physician side, and then to talk about what type of patient or what type of consumer uses concierge medicine. About 90% of the concierge medical practices out there are solo practices. They're not group practices. And about 70% of those doctors who are internal medicine, there also is another very popular specialty, which is family medicine. And we are seeing concierge medical business models grow inside of pediatric practices, dental practices. A lot of cardiologists are looking at concierge medicine as well. But the most by far is internal medicine and family medicine. Typically, a concierge physician inside of these practices will see a patient. We'll see about 6 to 8 patients a day. Now, getting to the patient side, the average age is typically around 51 to 65. And you know, if we know anything about marketing and demographics, if I'm a 45-year-old physician, I'm typically going to attract an audience that's within about 10 years of my own age. Now, female physician practices do fill up quite a bit faster, we found, than male practices, just because females are the healthcare CEOs of the majority of the families out there. Now, what's also interesting, and Dr. Campbell alluded to this, is concierge medicine, you know, like it or hate it or what you know about it, it is not an elitist thing. It is not what we see portrayed in the media or on television. You know, over 62% of the physician or the patient programs out there cost less than $135 a month. And you pair that with a high deductible wraparound insurance policy, there is a considerable savings. And we've seen, you know, the insurance market beta test this in certain markets such as Cigna and I think Associated Mutual, but they're rolling those wraparound products with direct primary care and concierge medical groups in select markets.
So from a national perspective here in the United States, looking at who your subscribers are and their interest level, are there pockets geographically where it's more accepted or more adopted, and how does the Southeast or where we're sitting fit into that?
The Southeast is very popular. Their top five most popular states are Florida, Virginia, New York, California, and Washington State. And closely followed behind in the top 10 are Georgia, Virginia, I believe Oregon, and Arizona. So, you know, we are seeing that there is a very wide amount of people who are very curious about this. We have typically four audiences. We have the concierge physician community who reads our publication and subscribes to our resources. Then we have tire kicker physicians. You know, they're curious mm-hmm. about it. They don't know enough about it, so they're looking, you know, to us for that information, kind of a guide, you know, just a beginner's where do I get some information about this? And, you know, how do I know if I'm the right fit? We have a self-test. You know, if you're married and you're a physician considering this and you have your own, you know, solo group practice, then your wife needs to be on board with this. You know, this is not something that you would want to wade into by yourself, or your husband needs to be on board with this. If he or she strongly disagrees with this practice model,
Dr. Campbell alluded to
this is not
the role your spouse had.
He absolutely was a supporter. Without his support, it would have failed.
Mm-hmm. Is your self-test available online?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Why don't you give us the website for that?
It's Concierge Medicine Today, and on the right-hand side, you can just scroll down. It says self-test.
Okay, very good. So good for the providers to know. I know when Michael was speaking, Dr. Campbell, he alluded to the fact that a lot of concierge physicians have a caseload that is much different than we think. You were talking about something like every 6 minutes I had to see another patient, whether I was ready or not, and the volume I know typically for a physician is more like 25 to 40 patients a day. And Michael, you mentioned an average concierge caseload would be more like 6 to 8 patients a day. How does that fit with your model?
That's very close to my model. We see a lot more patients than that in a day because I also do ancillary services with the nurse. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we do in integrative and holistic medicine is we do a lot of IV nutrition therapy. So we give a lot of IV vitamins, and we do I have treatments for asthma attacks that are IV and for migraine headaches that are IV. So the patients would come and seek us rather than an emergency room mm-hmm. to get those treatments. Providing not only a relatively drug-free approach without side effects, but also better, longer-lasting relief. When I did traditional family medicine, my patient caseload was approximately 3,000 to 3,500 patients per year, depending on the on the year. And now I have in my practice right now, I'm not full. I have 219 patients in my mm-hmm. entire patient practice. Mm-hmm. Now, since I've been in solo practice, I've had 1,700 patients. Mm-hmm. So they come and go. Mm-hmm. Many get
but
better
active.
Enough,
yeah,
but active at any given moment, 200. Mm-hmm. And yet I still see 6 to 9 to 10 patients a day mm-hmm. On the days. Full days that I see patients.
Now, is on your business model, because I've read there's pure concierge, there's hybrid. We talked at the very
yes.
beginning about how many different business models are kind of incorporated and people are experimenting to see what works both for the provider and also for the patients in terms of affordability and access. So do you provide only concierge medicine?
Yes, my practice is now and always has been only cash only. For the first 3 years, I operated under a business model in which patients paid by the hour. So mm-hmm. however, whatever fraction of the hour they utilized is what they paid me for. What I realized, well, I didn't realize it, a consultant realized mm-hmm. it for me, was that for every hour face-to-face that I spent with a patient, there was approximately 1 to 2 hours on the backside that I spent charting the note,
yes.
coordinating the care, calling the specialist.
All the non-reimbursable stuff.
All the non-reimbursable stuff.
Right.
And so the business model was not, for me, financially successful. So I evolved to the membership model where the patient pays me for my time, inclusive of those things. And mm-hmm. that made a big difference. I was also able to cut down from hundreds and hundreds of patients to just a couple of hundred. Mm-hmm. For most concierge medicine doctors, they'll keep a patient roster of somewhere between 200 and 800 patients is kind of typical. I'm near the lower end of that. I think female gender physicians generally like to have the lower number of patients. We do indeed spend a lot more time with our patients, in part because most of our patients are women, mm-hmm. and women are relational. And very often we include the care of the family members in the care plan that we make mm-hmm. for the patient. And so talking to the woman about her 16-year-old daughter is as therapeutic to the visit mm-hmm. as anything else that we might mm-hmm. do. And she needed that time to vent and have
de-stress.
Some solutions mm-hmm. and de-stress.
Very good. So we've heard Dr. Campbell's model. Michael, I'd like to again go back to a national perspective. I know there's a broad spectrum for everything from insurance can be used, and I'm just going to pay for the kind of time and
service.
Attention,
mm-hmm.
yeah, just for the concierge part of the service, and then that same internist could still access my insurance to the other end, which is Dr. Campbell. Can you speak about some common business models and payment arrangements that you see across the board?
Yeah, from a very high-level perspective, there are essentially two business models, to make it very simplistic, in concierge medicine when you're looking at this. There is what Dr. Campbell has is more of a fee-for-care or direct mm-hmm. primary care mm-hmm. Type of business model where you don't accept insurance. Then there is what physicians in the community calls hybrid concierge medicine, where you have you accept insurance and you participate in the majority of PPO plans. Typically, a lot of physicians who are concierge and run hybrid practices and accept insurance do not participate with HMOs, and they do accept Medicare for the most part. About 60% of the concierge doctors out there do have Medicare patients, and about 80% of the concierge physician community out across the nation do participate in some form of insurance. I have always admired the fee-for-care model, which Dr. Campbell and others practice, because it is very simplistic, and I think that it is a growing model that's going to be moving forward. I think that, there are a lot of patients who are now looking into concierge medicine for the very first time that haven't. And the first question that we hear from physicians and patients is, well, how does it work with my insurance? Mm-hmm. It's not about price. Well, how much is extra does this cost? It's not. It's always about, how does this work with my current insurance? Do you accept Medicare? Well, how much does all this cost? And, okay, well, our administrative staff and myself, we will work with you to find a catastrophic health plan that, you know, in addition to your $100 a month or $50 a month that you're paying me as to be your physician 24/7 and come in for, you know, unfettered access, you know, we will help you find coverage for your hospitalization in the event of a car wreck or, mm-hmm. you know.
Very good. So we heard kind of Dr. Campbell's model is cash-based, fee-for-service, depending upon what the patient needs and what you agree to on the care plan. On the concierge access only and still using the insurance model, the other business model, What is a range of price on what it would cost somebody annually or per month?
Annually, we're seeing rates between $1,200 and $1,800. Typically in your and doctors are not requiring that, you know, right away. They're saying, you know, you can pay this monthly, quarterly.
They've been very flexible most, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know, in certain markets like your Los Angeles or your Miami or your Orlando or Washington, D.C., Raleigh, Durham areas, you're going to see prices go up because the market and demographics can reflect a higher price of about $1,800 to $1,650.
So it's market-driven too based on – well, that's just the general care in that market.
And we've seen places like Kansas who charges $10 a month, and then you pay a fee for the copay, which the copay is – another $10. Mm-hmm. So very simple price transparent practices.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of price transparency and us all being better shoppers, the thing right in front of us all beginning in October is the Affordable Care Act. So I'd be interested on both of your perspectives on what you think this will do to this kind of arrangement with patients. You know, do you think it will drive it? Do you think it will hinder it? Dr. Campbell, let's start with you.
Well, first of all, I must confess I haven't read the act.
Me neither.
What is it, 10 million pages?
Yeah,
and
I think it's,
you know,
like
16,
2 feet high.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I don't have the time or inclination to read it. So, and in fact, there seems to be a lot of unfunded mandates and a lot of questions, as many questions remain in the implementation of the Affordable Care Act as answers that we already have. That being said, the idea of the CARE Act is to provide more care to more people. I think that in many ways it will actually impede the care that many patients can get. It may provide an opportunity to get your face in front of your doctor for 30 seconds, but that's not the care that you need. It's going to be an opportunity for time without quality. And many consumers have had it up to their eyeballs with the 1 minute, one complaint, one prescription, make another appointment if you have another issue model of care delivery. And so I think it will be an opportunity for more patients to seek alternatives. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to see all kinds of them crop up. I think this is part of the reason why there's quick care clinics in pharmacies, is because patients are not getting the care that they need from their providers, and we're looking for other delivery models. And this is, of course, my jaded opinion, a very beautiful way to get direct access, personalized care, quality care, extra time with your physician provider, to be empowered with information for better self-care, to have your doctor's cell phone number, email address, to get care when you need it, or to get directed to care if your doctor can't provide it in a timely fashion.
Yeah, so I think there's a couple of trends. One is, no matter what model you pick, we're all going to have to be better shoppers, and we're all going to have to be more responsible for our healthcare choices that we make than maybe we have been in the past.
Agreed.
With the old model. So certainly yours will be held up as one alternative that's a little bit more fast track, direct back to the provider. I think also another trend kind of feeding into this is that, just like we were talking on our show, we now are integrating the ability to interact by Twitter and social media. Those listeners out there that want to interact with us newly, you can feature us and get connected with us at live at hashtag DRT Radio. And put in questions or join the conversation, and we'll pick them up as we go. But in general, we are learning to communicate digitally. And so access, direct access, cell phone, how do I reach you, is becoming more and more important to consumers as they look at healthcare decisions.
It is indeed. And I, you know, I think Michael alluded to the fact that it's the cost of care is absolutely not transparent in our current system. And the cost varies. The cost, there's no, you don't shop for corn at the grocery store and get three different prices depending on what part of town you came from or what car you drive. And yet in health insurance, there may be five different prices for a colonoscopy depending on which care provider you're bringing to the table. And so I think a lot of that transparency will have to develop among the existing care delivery system, And we're already transparent. People right. know exactly how much we charge.
Right. Michael, on your from your perspective on the Affordable Care Act coming into play, how do you think it will impact? What are you seeing and what are you hearing? What are you writing about in your publication?
Yeah. One of the most recent things that we've written about is direct primary care, also known as another form of concierge medicine, has a clause that was recently written into the Affordable Care Act that will essentially allow these types of retainer practices to be combined with a wraparound insurance policy. So because of, you know, that will also help, I think, spur and grow these practices and grow this industry. This is a very elegant solution to one of our, you know, many healthcare systems problems in the country. And I think also because of the uncertainty of the Affordable Care Act, you know, everybody's kind of waiting for the big shoes to drop or how many shoes are going to drop. Because of this uncertainty, we're going to start looking for other solutions. We're going to start looking for other answers. And we see from a lot of physicians and a lot of business leaders who are talking about concierge medicine and just their problems with the current insurance market in America, that the days of going to see your doctor who you've known for 10, 15 years are over. And in the next 5, probably 10 years, we're going to be going to a clinic in our neighborhood, and we're going to see Dr. Smith 1 week, and then the next month we'll probably see Dr. Joan, and you know, maybe the next time we'll probably see a nurse practitioner or a PA. And then all of this medical home that we're seeing, you know, in our local area is not personal. It's not providing that type of care. So I think that we're going to see a lot more interest in concierge medicine.
I think it's more of a data medical home than a patient medical home mm-hmm. in many cases, yeah.
Yeah, concierge medicine, the best way to describe it is I no longer have to look at a medical chart to know your name.
Very good. Okay, let's talk a little bit. And our listeners, I think they're interested. We've talked a lot about the growing dissatisfaction on the patient side. You mentioned since your practice, Dr. Campbell, you started, you feel much more satisfied. Can you speak to the provider satisfaction when you kind of get a chance to get back to the patients and what has happened since you made the switch yourself?
Absolutely. Well, I think that it's hard for me to separate what the greater part of my career satisfaction has come from. If it's come from divorcing the insurance companies, although because I'm still strapped, I still fight some of those battles. For example, I wrote a prescription for a patient yesterday for a medicine, and then I got a phone call that because I'm not a Medicaid provider, that they wouldn't accept the prescription. That has never happened before in 9 years, and the clerk on the other end of the phone said they got an email in May, and this is a new thing, and so I'm still working to fight mm-hmm. that battle and find out what she really meant and what the email said and whether it's really an issue. But so my two things that give me great satisfaction are divorced from the rules, regulations of insurance to serve the needs of the patient. Or is my satisfaction coming from the integrative and functional mm-hmm. medicine that I provide and the get to the root cause of what it is that made the patient sick or diabetic or
rather than symptom
anxious
control. Mm-hmm.
Rather than symptom control. And so I have the blessing of the time to spend with my patient. My new patient encounters rarely are less than 90 minutes, and that's face-to-face time with me and the patient. And they fill out a 21-page medical history before we get even started that talks about everything from their birth history to their vaccination history to what they ate and how it looked when it came out. Mm-hmm. And so getting a thorough appreciation of the patient is paramount to understanding who that patient is, where they come from, what their health goals are, what their barriers to better health are. And that's why I went into medicine, mm-hmm. is to help to be a coach along the way. The word doctor means teacher, and I never got a chance to do that very much when all I did was write prescriptions.
Mm-hmm. Is this a similar story that you hear, Michael, nationally when you speak to providers and look at providers that are growing and joining the ranks in concierge medicine and making the switch? Are the same kind of feelings?
Absolutely. It is. We hear from physicians every day that say, I am so grateful that I chose to do this. It was scary at first, but I got myself surrounded by a good team, and it wasn't just my staff. It was some outside resources, and you know, I'm happier than I ever have been. And as far as career satisfaction among the physician community, you know, nationally, and also, you know, our readers also, we have concierge physicians who are practicing in Canada, of all places, the physician satisfaction across the board is very, very satisfied. 82% of the physicians we recently polled were highly satisfied with their choice to move
compared
into concierge
medicine.
Compared to a
traditional what, do you think?
Compared to a traditional managed care insurance-based practice, which
but, I mean,
is what they're in.
Do you have any statistics or knowledge? Like if 82% of concierge physicians are happy the way they're practicing, what about the traditionally practicing?
I've not looked at those guys.
That is way less than 82%.
Yeah, I haven't looked at those numbers. But I do know that when these physicians chose concierge medicine, they also the majority reported an increase in income too. And the majority of physicians who are, you know, decide to move into this, you know, they should know that I get to spend more time with my patients, which is important. And I also get a better quality of life for myself too. And, you know, does that follow with somewhat of a bit of a pay raise? And the answer is yes, it does. You know, there are some who are, you know, the majority are not making the Royal Pains USA Network type of, you know, dollars. You know, you're not going to expect that type of increase. But, you know, the majority of patients or physicians who are moving to this, rather, are between the ages of 40 and 60. So, you know, to come right out of medical school and expect to get into concierge medicine is going to be difficult for a recent graduate.
I would like to make a comment too, Michael, that you said you need a good team to surround you, and I think that that's critical. I don't think any physician provider who is – and I think there's probably some that aren't even physicians. In some markets, there are nurse practitioners and who can be independent and have their own concierge practices. But you need good support. You need somebody to coach you through it, to help you transition, to get the right documents, the right forms, to make sure that you're doing it legally in your state. If especially dangerous if you're going to use a hybrid model and bill insurance, that you never call yourself an insurance model, that, oh, we're just like insurance. Well, you are not just like insurance, and you don't function like insurance, and you shouldn't say that you do insurance. So you really do need a legal team and or a consultant to assist you. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure concierge medicine today could make those
we
services
have
available
of,
to you.
We have a wealth of resources, and we typically you know, vet the physicians and answer their questions and give them a starting point, and then direct them and guide them to the right people and the right team that will help them make those tough decisions.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, we're almost out of time, but I know from the listener's perspective, one of the bits of feedback that I get is listeners remember success stories more than they do the statistics we've kind of bantered around today. And I know that you as provider, Dr. Campbell, you being able to make a difference is one of the things that you said has kind of spurred you on. So can you think of one patient story that kind of stands out since you've made the switch that you really believe this switch has allowed you to impact that life or that patient?
Yeah, I can. Well, one thing that it does allow me is the additional time that I don't spend seeing patients, I spend a lot more time reading the literature of the things that I enjoy. And I happen to be particularly interested in prostate cancer prevention, and I had been reading an interesting article from some doctors at Northwestern in Chicago who discovered an unusual trend in the rise of blood infections following prostate cancer biopsies. And these blood infections were with drug-resistant organisms that don't respond to the usual antibiotics. So a patient of mine had an elevated PSA. I sent him to the urologist for prostate biopsy, and he called me on Saturday evening. And he's at home on my cell phone, and he said, I feel terrible. I think I have the flu. So what are your symptoms? He said, I have shaking chills, and I'm nauseated, and I have a fever of 103, and I feel terrible. I said, I remember I referred you for this prostate biopsy. You just had a biopsy 2 days ago, didn't you? He said, yes. I said, do not pass go. Do not do anything. Get your wife. Immediately proceed to the emergency room. Tell them that your primary care doctor suspects you have a multiply drug-resistant blood infection related to your prostate biopsies. And so he went to the emergency room. He said, I have flu-like symptoms, and my doctor says I'm supposed to tell you. And he did, and they didn't believe him. However, he had a fever of 103 and was shaking, and so they didn't want to send him home like that. They kept him in the emergency room for observation, and 12 hours later, his blood cultures grew out multiply drug-resistant Pseudomonas organism, and I was correct, and his trip to the emergency room saved his life. Mm. Now, in a traditional practice, I probably wouldn't have read that article. I wouldn't have been in time. I wouldn't have been at home to answer my cell phone. The answering service would have been told the guy to go to the emergency room. The emergency room would have treated him like it's a traditional urinary tract infection following biopsy, and he very well could have died.
Yeah,
but instead,
quick sepsis.
Everything worked together to identify early on the septic condition, the cause of the infection, and very strangely, his urologist didn't know about it, the emergency room doctor didn't know about it, the inpatient team didn't know about it, and the infectious disease doctor didn't know about this new trend. So it was our opportunity to educate them so that the future patients who present won't have to suffer in that same manner.
Very good. That's a great story about time to pay attention and making the whole system work together, because right now we're very, very fragmented. Michael, I'm interested on your part. You're both a resource for consumers and providers on your side. From the perspective of concierge medicine today, tell us about a success story you're having or how you're publication is really making an impact in your specialty?
Sure. Well, we see that we echo a lot of the sentiments. We hear a lot of the same messages coming from physicians who are our readers. And we also hear a lot of success stories from patients as well who said, you know, my doctor, having a concierge doctor saved my life. And having a doctor concierge position was so convenient when I had, you know, to get a prescription for pink eye and got erythromycin within 5 minutes of going to another meeting. We at Concierge Medicine Today have a wealth of resources. We have we focus on topics such as startups and hiring and surrounding yourself with the right team, as well as key performance indicators, how to market your practice because you are a niche practice. You are in a small community. How can I reach out to physicians out to local patients who are looking for a concierge doctor? So we have a wealth of resources and topics that help physicians, but also we have Concierge Medicine 101 articles at our website that educate patients as well on what can I expect, what are the myths about this, what are the frequently asked questions. And so we have all of that type of information on conciergemedicinetoday.com.
What is the split of your readers on providers to patients?
It's about half and half.
Okay, so that's what I would expect. Well, believe it or not, we're almost to the end of the hour. Time flies when you're having fun. I'd like to leave each of you with an opportunity to tell a little bit about your practice, how the patients and the doctors listening can get to you by phone and by web, and any just last-minute tips or thoughts that you have on the subject. Dr.
Excellent.
Campbell.
I'm Dr. Ellie Campbell. My practice is Campbell Family Medicine. Our website is campbellfamilymedicine.com. We're located in the beautiful collection at Forsyth, formerly called the Avenue Mall in Cumming, Georgia, right upstairs above Chico's, across the street from the Victoria's Secret.
Easy
so you
in
can
and
come
out
shop.
Off of 400, right?
Easy in and out off 400, and you can shop after your appointment because you're going to see us in so little time. There's no wait. Most of our patients spend less than 5 minutes in the waiting room before they're seen in the exam room. Physician providers can reach us through info@campbellfamilymedicine.com. I do welcome new start physicians, people who are interested. I'd love to share my experience and information. Patients can access the website to get our phone number and contact information.
Okay, great. And your phone number is?
678-474-4742.
Great. Michael, and your publication, is there a way, we said the website once, but let's repeat it.
It's conciergemedicinetoday.com, and you can subscribe free to our e-newsletter, and all of our articles and resources, our topics and stories are all free. We do have a resource center where we have a number of books related to the topic of concierge medicine. We recently put out Branding Concierge Medicine for those concierge physicians looking to grow their practice and how do they do it step by step. Then we also have, for the patient who is considering concierge medicine, Why Choose Concierge Medicine, which will be out in August. And then we also have Docpreneur, the doctor's guide to concierge medicine, how to get your practice up and running, and that will also be out. And both of those are actually on pre-order sale right now at
Very
our
good.
Website.
So I predict you'll get a lot busier between now and the next 2 years as people look for other options, both on the provider side and the patient side. Thank you both for being here today. We've enjoyed your visit, and thanks to the readers for tuning in. We'll catch you next time. Thanks.
The Doctor's Roundtable has been a production brought to you by HealthGate and Business Radio X. HealthGate is a groundbreaking website where board-certified doctors and specialists offer savings on out-of-pocket healthcare costs. For more information about HealthGate, please visit www.healthgate.com or call 404-692-5377. We hope you tune in next week, and thank you for listening.